Hello listeners, and welcome to this week's episode of The Cult Vault. I'm your speaker Casey, and this week we are continuing with our coverage of the troubled teen industry. For this instalment, I'm speaking with Tyler, a former resident of Teen Challenge. Tyler is an inspirational example of how to make the best of your own situation and change things for the better, using your own personal strength. A quick bit of business before we start. For anyone who would like to sign up, you can support the podcast through Patreon for as little as £1 a month, with a number of exclusive episodes already available, and more on the way each month. I also have an Android app called The Cult Vault, available on the Google Play Store. If you have 5 minutes, you could leave a review of the podcast, share and follow. This helps with exposure and reaching new listeners. I also have a second podcast, The Conspiracy Vault, with a number of episodes available today. Now, enough of business. Here is Tyler. Hello, Tyler, and thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today. We are in the middle of the Troubled Teen Industry month of December, where I am hoping to cover various different programs involved in the Troubled Teen Industry. And you've come here to talk to me today about something that I haven't covered before, which is really exciting. Would you like to introduce yourself to the listeners and let them know a little bit about yourself?
My name's Tyler. I'm really excited to be on the podcast with you today. I'm currently living in Colorado, getting ready to move back to Florida. Been working in a music store for a little while. Once I move, I am planning on attending cosmetology school. So definitely more of an interest in the creative side of things.
Cosmetology. What is cosmetology?
So it's really a mix of anything to do with, I guess, beauty. So hairdressing, nails, makeup artists. I'm going for hairdressing, specifically with the focus in hair dye.
Right. Brilliant. And we're here to talk today about your experience in the program you attended called Teen Challenge.
Yes.
And could you just briefly summarize for the listeners what this program is and what year you attended?
So the program, I guess the best way to explain it is how they advertise themselves, which is as a Christian residential program made to help people with life controlling issues, primarily drug addiction. That's really how it got its start, but it's kind of expanded to anything that could be considered a life controlling issue. I attended from 2013 to 2015.
Okay, so pretty recently. So is this a program that is still in operation?
Oh, very much so. I mean, it's a worldwide program. There's organizations all over the US, all over the world. So very much still going.
Okay. And my next question was going to be, where does it operate? And I suppose you've just answered that question, but where specifically were you living when you attended, or which program were you sent to within America?
So I was sent to the location in Columbus, Georgia.
Okay. And what does it look like? Because I'm picturing the word challenge to me makes me think of high ropes and zip lines and team building challenges.
Right. So the actual center that we had, so we were actually the largest adolescent center in the U.S. The actual property, it used to be a golf course, actually. And before that, it was an Indian reservation. So, you know, that place is cursed for sure. But it's... The challenge, I think, probably more comes from the emotional challenge. So it's not as much as like a wilderness program as like some other places are.
Right. Okay. And you were sent 2013 to 2015. And what age were you at this time?
I was 13.
13 years old. And what were the reasons for you being sent there? Was it a decision that you made?
No, I had
your
no
family. Right. Okay. You had no say.
I had about 2 days' notice before I got sent there. So as far as for why I wasn't there, it was for a mix of reasons, for behavioral issues and like self-harm, and that was pretty much the majority of it.
Okay. And you were, do you know why this program was picked particularly?
Because I believe it was because it was a Christian program and my family is Christian.
Okay.
So that just kind of was the better option, it seemed like to them.
Okay. And you mentioned in some of our emails backwards and forwards that you were adopted into this family.
Yes.
And what age were you when they made the decision to adopt?
I was 11.
11. Okay. So that's in the grand scheme of things, that's quite old to be adopted. Usually people
Yes.
look for younger children who might have an easier time transitioning from one family to another.
Yes.
So do you think that your turbulent or difficult time in that process caused you to find yourself self-harming?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I was adopted at 11, but a year prior, my first adoptive parents had passed away, within a few months of each other. So between that and being moved around between families and then being adopted with very short notice again, that's kind of a theme throughout my life, very short notice for things. So yeah, that absolutely played a part.
And the parents that you had that sadly passed away, were you with them for a long time?
I was with them since birth.
Oh my goodness. So they were your parents.
Yeah. Like they were my adoptive parents as well. I've never known my biological family, but yeah, like they I grew up with them. They were my parents.
Oh, that's so difficult. It must be difficult for anybody to lose a parent, let alone at an age where you're growing, hormones
Yeah.
are developing, you're going through such big changes physically, emotionally, and mentally anyway. And then for something like this to happen, it must be so difficult. And on top of that, the transition to a new family and being moved around, it's no surprise that your mental health suffered.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that really should have been expected, I feel like.
And when you go to live with this new family, what are your first impressions?
My first impressions was that they were very nice. I had a weird situation with the adoption process. The family I'd been living with beforehand had essentially gone to my social worker and said, okay, you've got 2 weeks to place him in a home or putting him into a group home. So I before moving in with the family, I had one sit down meeting, one like night we went out to dinner, one weekend with them, and then the next week I moved. So it was within about 2 weeks. So my first impression was, you know, they seemed very nice. They were opening their home to me. They were, you know, it's very positive.
Okay. And do you feel like they felt that sending you to a place like Teen Challenge was a last resort?
I don't know. Like, I feel like probably in their eyes, they felt it was a last resort. But now, being older and like looking back on it, I really do see that there were other options that they could have exhausted before that.
So just talk the listeners through the sort of leading up to and then decision to have you go to Teen Challenge. You going there, how did you travel? And then you arrive there, and what are your first impressions? Just trying to paint this picture and talk us through sort of like the whole journey.
Right. So I mean, it had been a lot of lead up. There were a lot of arguments between me and my parents, a lot that would turn into yelling matches. Started back to school in eighth grade, which I guess that would be year eight for y'all. I'm not entirely sure. But my grades plummeted, which was also a result of them taking off my ADHD medication, but that's a whole different conversation there. Grades plummeting. They didn't like, you know, the boys that I would date in middle school. Not that it really mattered at that point, but a lot of arguments and things. I don't know what the decision process was like for them because I had no involvement in that. It was a Tuesday I got home from school. They sat me down. They told me they were taking me there. I obviously did not like that. Kind of freaked out, tried to run away, didn't really work out. I only got about 20 minutes away, got freaked out, came back home. Wednesday was spent purchasing all the things I would need for the program. Thursday, we left. So we drove up there. I'm originally from Florida, and Georgia is a neighboring state. So it was just about a 6-7 hour drive. Okay, so upon first arrival there, so it says Columbus, Georgia, but it's actually in a very small middle of nowhere town in Alabama. So driving through that was like, okay, where the hell am I? This is middle of nowhere. Upon getting to the program, it's a beautiful campus. Like, I'll definitely give them that. But the first thing that happens when you get there is you go inside of their main office. You are greeted by one of the program directors, your counselor, one of the staff members who will live in your dorm, and two students. One is called what's called your sister, where your first 3 weeks in the program, you have to stay within 6 feet of this person at all times. And they're kind of like an assigned friend who shows you the rules.
And they are labeled as sister.
Yes.
Right, okay. Interesting, because that's very much like CDU.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I haven't
Yeah,
done a
they
lot.
have older brothers and sisters, and basically they chaperone you, so you're never on your own.
Yeah, that's essentially what it is for your first. Well, you're
Right.
always monitored, but it's like extra within those first few weeks. So you go in, you get introduced. Oh, and the other student there is what's called your half sister, where essentially if your sister is not present at a counseling, a family visit, what have you, they'll fill in for the sister.
Okay.
So you go in, you get introduced to them, walk you back to your car, remove all your belongings. So you say goodbye to your parents, and then that's it. And you are being led back to your dorm, and you don't see them for another about 2 months.
Right, okay. And how often are you able to have contact with them?
So for your first 3 weeks, there's no contact at all. After your first 3 weeks, you can start sending and receiving letters, both of which are heavily monitored. Everything gets read before it gets sent out, before it gets given to you. After your first month, we were allowed to have phone calls, which were once every other week for 20 minutes. Also monitored, there were staff members who would go. There were several phone calls that would happen at once. Phones were on speaker. Staff would go in and out. They would write notes on what you were talking about to give to your counselor. If they felt you were being disrespectful or you're talking about what was actually going on there, they would end the phone call.
And that's a lot like CDU as well. And the reason I'm drawing parallels is obviously because from the research and the coverage I've done on the troubled teen industry, all roads kind of lead back to Synanon, and CDU is very, very heavily influenced by Synanon and the practices used within that original cult. And Teen Challenge is something that opened up after CDU. So I'm just trying to see how similar all these programs are, and so far kind of sounds as if they're all taking inspiration from one another. So you arrive, and on your first day you mentioned some propaganda that you're shown immediately.
Yeah, so it was. I can't remember if it was that first day or that second day, but we were given a book, the first book we were given to read there, called The Cross and the Switchblade. It was written by the man who started Teen Challenge, and it was about the history, like the journey of him starting the program and how, it took place and the people that he helped. And honestly, I mean, obviously, yes, propaganda being given to us, because it's like, this is the good, this is what we are. And I truly believe that David Wilkerson is his name, which any Christians that might be listening to that might be a very well-known name. I believe he started it with good heart because he went to New York City. He wanted to help drug addicts. He wanted to get them off the street. He wanted to show them God and help them become functioning members of society, which is great. It just did not develop into that.
And what are your impressions of this when you're being, when you're being shown? Is it something that you think is believable, or does it just kind of sound a little bit strange?
I mean, it seems believable, but it's like, I didn't feel like there needed to be a whole book written about it, if that makes sense. It was just kind of okay, like, I guess I have to read this. This is about the history of the program. I don't really care at that point because I'm still trying to figure out what's going on.
And is it a book that you're encouraged to read throughout your time there? Are you allowed access to any other types of writing or reader material?
Yes. So the book, I don't recall reading it again, as it's just the first thing you're given. But there is a movie made about it, which we watched. I want to say I watched it probably 10 times within my 20 months there.
Right, okay.
As far as like other books, yes, because we had to have them for our school program, but it was all controlled what we could read and when we could read them and what titles were allowed on the shelves.
Right,
But that
okay.
wasn't like we had easy access to it. We had to ask a staff member who had to go get it and had to make sure that it was for an actual reason that we needed it. So,
And you've arrived, you've been introduced to your counselor. Is this somebody that is actually trained and qualified as a counselor?
I don't remember if my specific counselor was. I think there were like one or two out of five counselors that were actually certified. I think there might have been some that were working on their certification, but they definitely weren't. They didn't have that degree.
Right, okay. Once you've been introduced and settled in and given this book to read, and what is your average day and week from then onwards? How does it look?
So the average day, Monday to Friday, wake up at 6 a.m. The first thing is you can't talk for the first hour of the day when you're getting ready for the day. So silence for the first hour. Breakfast. We had a devotional program called Personal Studies for New Christians. So we went to our school building, did that for an hour, and those were required to graduate. After that, it was school, lunch, more school, and then we had assigned activities because there were three dorms. At least at the beginning of my program, they added a fourth later on, but each dorm had assigned activities in the afternoon after school. After that, we had assigned activities which ranged from PE, more PS and Cs. We had like a rec room that had like a TV in there, and we could just essentially just hang out. So it was really any variation of any of those. Dinner, one more activity after dinner, and then getting ready for bed. And then at the end of the night, we had lights out at 10. At 9:30, we had a required 20 minutes of Bible reading. And in between all of that, there was prayer all the time. There was devotional in the morning. The online school was Christian. On Wednesday nights, we went to church. On Friday mornings, we had chapel. Weekends were a little bit more relaxed. That's when any of the work, because we had one of our punishments was like a 1 hour of work, so any work punishments were done on Saturdays. Sundays we went to church in the morning and at night.
Right, so there's a lot of religious influence.
Yes.
And which did you have a religious affiliation before you went to Teen Challenge?
Yeah, so I considered myself Christian. I mean, I had been raised in church and Christian schools and Christian families, so that's where my affiliation lied.
And what about after Teen Challenge? Did you find your religious affiliation stronger or damaged?
So initially stronger, but I think that was mainly because of what they taught us and what I feel like was brainwashing. Just like, oh, well, you're not going to be able to be anything without God and Jesus. Like, you have to follow this, and or else your life will get worse and whatever. There was a brief period where I considered myself atheist, but it took a journey of cycling through different beliefs and different belief systems. I currently consider myself Wiccan, so it's very much very different from where I started. But yeah, that was a few year journey to get there.
Right. So you're here and you're attending the program, and you mentioned that you had to do some of the educational side of things was mostly writing reports. So was this is this formal education? What do the reports entail?
So as far as the education and then the personal, the PSNC, so those were two different. So the reports and things went along with the PSNCs, which was it was divided into 11 units. So each unit you had to do a book report, you had to do studies on what were called character qualities, writing down when we read the book, it had to be every single chapter was at least a 50 word summary of what we learned and what was it about. As far as the formal education part goes, we did all online school, which was really difficult, because we had teachers, and I say that very loosely, in the classroom with each dorm. At first part of my program, none of them were actual certified teachers. They were just there to make sure we didn't misbehave, essentially, and answer any basic questions that we had. And they'd rotate through from dorm to dorm, depending on what subject was their specialty, I guess what they were better at. So yeah, I mean the formal education was okay. I didn't have an issue with it, but I know several people who ended up they would get mostly done with high school there, but their credits wouldn't transfer, so they it would basically be useless. They would have to go get their GED after doing high school.
Right, so it's almost like having to go through the entire process again.
Yeah, essentially.
And your computers are monitored, is that right?
Yes, so the teacher that we had in the classroom, they had a thing on their screen where they could see all of our screens at all times.
And was there internet connection on the computers?
No, or I think there might have been, but everything was blocked except for our school website and
Right.
any websites that we had to access for the schooling.
Okay. And you mentioned as well something about bathroom breaks even being monitored.
Oh yeah. So when it came into the school part, we would have an intern, which was a past student who stayed on to intern. They would come in and it'd be three people at a time per dorm because there are three bathroom stalls. There got to a point in my program where people kept writing on the walls. So their first step was, okay, we'll just check everyone's pockets before they go in. It kept happening. So they took the doors off of our bathroom stalls in the school building. And a teacher would go in and watch us use the restroom to make sure no one was writing on the walls.
That is absolutely horrific.
Yeah, it's pretty awful. I refused for like, it was probably about 4 months. It was like that. I wouldn't use the bathroom in the school. I'd just wait all day
That
just
is
because I
such
had
a
scheduled.
violation of so many different things, and
Oh, I
creepy as
know.
well.
Yes, the thing is though, because I've talked to people who have more recently graduated from there, they now have cameras in the bathrooms in the school bill or in the dorms.
They have cameras in the dorms watching people sleep.
In the bathrooms as well.
Oh my goodness. That is not, I'm pretty sure that's not even legal over here.
I don't know how it's legal there. I mean, they claim it's facing away from the stalls, they can't see in the stalls, but like, really, who's to say?
And if they're willing to take the toilet cubicle doors off and have staff stand in there and watch you, then what's the difference anyway?
Exactly.
Oh
So,
my
I mean, it
goodness.
really kind of seems like a logical step, probably in their minds.
And what was the therapy like? So there's two parts of Teen Challenge from what I could gather from the information you sent over. There's the education side we've just spoken about, and then there's the therapy side, which is to help with all of the difficulties your family were going through with yourself and the reasons they sent you there specifically.
Right. So that was kind of a joke, I'll be honest with you. Most of the therapy was here, read this book about whatever issue you're having, or just pray and God will help you and be a better Christian and God will help you. It was very rarely any real therapy. Like there were bits and pieces maybe of actual helpful advice, none of which I remember, so I guess not that helpful. But yeah, it was essentially just ask God, he'll help you, whatever. Not really much of any real therapy.
Right, okay. So when I say there's two parts of Teen Challenge, then it sounds more like it's one part education, two parts church services and Bible study.
Essentially, yes.
Okay. And you sent me some pictures of the Teen Challenge rule book.
Yes.
So I'm just going to read the front page that says the environment at Teen Challenge is one of family. It is a home away from home for its students designed to provide warmth and support in an atmosphere of peace and harmony. Does that sound accurate?
No. It just didn't feel like a home away from home. It felt like a prison away from home. Nothing comfortable about that, really.
Establishing godly values, protecting our students, and providing an atmosphere of personal growth and change.
Yeah, I mean, personal growth and change, it was more of a behavioral change to avoid getting in trouble, if
Okay.
anything.
Okay. We believe that God, the giver and protector of life, has a unique plan for each girl at Teen Challenge. Through a personal relationship with Jesus Christ and the discipleship and training provided, each girl will find the hope and freedom that delivers them from life-controlling circumstances and equips them to make better decisions for themselves.
It's just, sorry, I don't know if you're asking me to comment on each part, but
Yeah,
it's
I'm just
just.
reading it out and just kind of just seeing what your thoughts and feelings are around what's written on the front page.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so inaccurate there. I mean, they don't set us up for success because they show us, okay, here's how to whatever, Jesus, and then they just throw us back into the real world. I mean, we did have home visits in the last few months of our program, once a month, 6 days. But it was all monitored again by our parents. So it's not like we really had a
Right.
chance to live in the real world. It didn't set us up for success. I mean, there are so many things that I was exposed to while being there that I didn't know about. Excuse me. I didn't know anything about heroin going into Teen Challenge. And then I came out with all this knowledge about what it does to you and how to use it. And I'm like, okay, well. Now I have this. I mean, there's so many people that I personally know who have gotten out, who have turned to hard drugs to, cope with what they're going through, or, turn to alcoholism, people who have died. Like, it doesn't set you up for success at
Okay,
all.
okay. And this being exposed to things that you didn't know about before you went to Teen Challenge, is this through other participants that have been sent there for drug use?
Yeah, so it would be through their testimonies. There is a part in that in the movie about Teen the Cross the Switchblade movie where they show a character using heroin.
Right,
Like
right.
they like there are things that we are shown, things that are talked about by other students, by testimonies from students from other programs that just exposes us, at least me and I know a few other younger people like myself, to things we had no idea about beforehand.
And when you say testimonies, is this sort of like you're sitting in a circle telling people your story?
No. So we actually weren't allowed to talk about why we could very loosely talk about why we were sent there. But we couldn't even mention the word drug. We couldn't mention the word self-harm. Like conversation was monitored like crazy. But it would be more of that we would have events that we would go to, or we'd have like people come to our center and we basically like put on a show for them. Like we'd sing and then we'd have somebody give their testimony, talk about, what sent them there and how Teen Challenge has helped them. At the graduation ceremonies that we had, and we all had to attend those, each student would go up on at the podium at a microphone and they would give their testimony.
Right. And the people in the audience, are they people potentially sending their children there, or are they sponsors and donors to the program?
So when we'd go like out to churches and do things like that, or we'd have people come into the center, it's pretty much always potential donors,
Right, right,
people who
right.
are giving support. As far as like new parents who are considering sending their children there, they would have tours sometimes where parents would come in, and they would choose two students to go sit down in a room with the parents, tell their testimony, answer any questions that they may have, like reassure them this is the right place, that kind of thing.
And you are joining in with the song and dance to avoid any punishment or telling off.
Yes.
Okay. So the next part on the student handbook cover, quickly just says, through our family and Christ's example, each student will discover many wonderful and exciting principles that will help them to live a productive life in Christ. Parents will take an active role in their daughter's recovery and healing by participating in visits, passes, and attending parenting meetings.
So we had family visit every other month, so it was every even month of the year. They would have a parent meeting before they got to see us. So it would be usually it was our program director and then another set of parents that have had a child in the program for usually about a year or like a long while. And they would speak to the parents about like how to parent your child and things like that. Which that was also the family visit. After they did that, they had another girl come in and give their testimony. I did give my testimony at one point. And then the rest of us would come in, we'd sing a song, and then we got to go with our parents.
Right, okay. And just reading through some of the rule book points here, it says things like parents may contribute to an activity fund for the students, a check or money order payable to Teen Challenge. Parents and students shall not bring gum, candy, junk food, or soda to the center. We reserve the right to inspect a student's personal belongings if circumstances lead us to believe a student is violating Teen Challenge guidelines. Is that ever something you experienced?
Yes. So they would actually do occasional dorm checks, like probably about once a month, where they would make sure your stuff was clean and not like messy or disorganized. If it was, they would give you a writing punishment called sentences, where they give you a character quality definition and then one or two Bible verses, and you had to write it 75 times in 3 days during all your free time. So they did that. They would occasionally go through and they would just like search your things. That only happened a few times, but it was mostly the dorm checks.
Right, okay. An interesting one here says students are not allowed to keep a chart or record of their time in or time remaining in their enrollment. That's a strange one. What's the purpose behind that rule?
Their whole thing is, oh, you're supposed to focus on the change, not the calendar. So I'm not really entirely sure what their full reasoning behind that was, but we weren't allowed to own a calendar. The only way we really knew what date it was based upon like the computers when we did school. And we were given so for our nightly Bible reading, we were given a sheet where it had like the date of each month, and we had like a specific passage to read per date. So like we knew our family visit was on the second weekend of every other month, so we would just count. We were like, okay, I know today's Saturday the 5th. Let me just count Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, all the way through until we found it. We would get in trouble for writing on our Bible reading sheets, like writing down what our past visits were, writing down what our home visits would be. So it was like a very secretive thing that we had to do.
Right. And it says here, students should never, underlined, never go to other students for answers to your questions. Students are not always accurate sources of information, and you will be held accountable, exclamation mark. So that sounds a bit ominous.
Yes, so that's a theme throughout the rule book actually, where they say this is also in the rule book our parents give us, saying that students ourselves, we're not trustworthy, don't believe what we say, confirm with the counselor, confirm with the staff member. Just because there's that, I don't know, that assumption that we're all liars, I guess.
It says students must be ready for church. Holding up the group will result in a writing discipline. So what's a writing discipline?
So that's what I think I just explained with the sentences, where it was the character quality definition of the quality. So one that I got a lot, because I am kind of a disorganized person, was neatness. So it'd be neatness, definition of that, and then Bible verses to go along with it, which any free time that you had whatsoever, you had to write it all out. It was 75 times within 3 days.
That's a lot, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's so much. This rule book is so long. Another thing
Yes.
here, it says, oh my goodness. So a few things in this church etiquette section, says things like, there is no talking upon entering the sanctuary. This
Yes.
includes youth group and parent weekend as well. There is no turning or looking around, all eyes forward. Students are not allowed to discuss their personal life, family struggles, or circumstances with anyone at the church, and that's in bold and underlined.
Yes.
It's very, students are to be sitting face forward, not sideways, upright, not slouching, or leaning on elbows while in the church. Shoes are to remain on, exclamation mark. Let your conduct be fitting for a woman of God. This reminds me of The Handmaid's Tale. Have you read The Handmaid's Tale or watched the series?
I've watched a little bit of it because my roommate was watching it a little while back. I mean, a little bit, yeah, because like some of those things aren't accurate. Like when we went to youth group on Wednesday night, we were allowed to talk before the service started. Parent weekend, we could only talk to our family. We couldn't talk to any other families that were there from parent weekend, anything like that. But everything else is accurate. Yeah, you know, sitting forward, couldn't slouch over, couldn't talk to each other. Yeah,
What
very.
happens if you do any of those things whilst you're in the sanctuary?
A discipline. It'll either be the 1 hour, what we call a 1 hour, which is just 1 hour of work, like some kind of manual labor, or the sentences.
Right, okay. So I found the types of discipline section in the handbook. So you said work, that's the one you've just mentioned, and scripture item
Yeah.
we've spoken about. There's something that says cheating. Any student found to be falsifying schoolwork in any manner will be required to start the course from the beginning.
Yes.
Wow, did that happen to you at any point?
No, but I was too scared to cheat. I was like, I'm not even gonna
Yeah,
bother. I don't
that's fair
care.
enough. It sounds like it was difficult to get through one report, let alone going back to the beginning.
Yeah.
Students who continue to struggle with problems associated with their conversation are put on silence. Silence includes talking to other students, eye contact, or gestures. So
So
that
that.
sounds like in CDU that they have different lingo, but it's the same thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, were you ever on a silence?
I personally never got a silence. But when we were being too loud as a group, or like in our cafeteria, like eating meals, they would put us all on silence. So it'd be 5 minutes, 10 minutes, sometimes up to 30 minutes. But I did watch people who would be put on silence. They'd be told you can't talk, and they just have to sit there.
And one last thing I'm just going to mention from the rule book is loss of privileges, which is privileges are exactly what they say, and they can be lost. Phone calls, mail, and passes can be taken away. So how are they seen as privileges? They're like, that's like your right to be able to contact your parents or family members whilst you're there. And they're saying that, you know, if you step out of line, then that's something that will be taken away from you.
Yes, absolutely. There was someone I personally knew who had her visit with her family taken away the day before the visit was supposed to happen.
That is,
Yeah,
oh,
so it
that
was
is.
in a, I know, I felt awful for her, but it was, so it was that, taking away communication with family. On Wednesday nights, you couldn't go to the youth group. You had to go to the regular service. So we had dinner at the church on Wednesday nights because they like made dinner for the people that attended. You had to bring a bagged lunch with you, so you couldn't have their food. You couldn't have desserts for a month. You couldn't have any free time, basically. Like everything was taken away from you.
That is so, that's awful. Not only are you away from home and you're in a place that's strange and not a home away from home, as you've said, you have the basic things of speaking to your parents taken away from you. That's so sad. And even here it says, students are expected to remain in their bunks after lights out. If you do not abide by these rules, then you can lose privileges for 30 days, have 1 month added to the program. Running away will result in the program starting over. Talking about running away will have 2 months added on.
You cannot say the words run away without getting in trouble.
Seriously. So what happened? Did that happen to anyone that you were there with?
Oh, yeah. No, there was one girl who said run away. I don't think it was even in the context of running away from the program. Someone told on her and she got 2 months added to her time.
Oh, so is it encouraged for you to sort of spy on each other?
Yes. So if you... Their whole thing was if somebody says something or does something they're not supposed to do and you don't say anything, you are, what's the word that they used? Not, I want to say complicit, but I know that's not the right term.
Yeah, I kind of get what you mean though, especially when it comes to Christianity and religion. You're almost allowing that person to be led astray and leading yourself astray by making sure, by not making sure that they repent and talk about impure thoughts and things like that.
Yeah, so if you didn't say anything and another student said something and it was found out that you could have said something, you'd get the same punishment as the first student who did whatever it was.
Oh my goodness. So what you mentioned having a live-in dorm staff. What were the sleeping arrangements and the dorms actually like?
So the dorm, it was 20 students to a dorm, divided into two sides, 10 per side, five bunk beds. You shared you shared a closet with your bunk mate, which was very small, and then you had three drawers and a dresser. There was a vanity with the mirrors and then a table and some chairs, but that was it per side. In the middle was a hallway with showers and the bathroom, and each side of the dorm had a live-in staff.
Okay, and I'm guessing this staff member was female?
Yes.
And do you know if they give the staff background checks if they're going to be living in dorms with young women?
I would assume so. That's something I don't know for sure. I know there were quite a few staff members who were previous Teen Challenge students.
Right.
There was actually, when I got to the end of near the end of my program, there was a staff member there who I had actually been in a dorm with. I was a student with her.
That's a bit strange, isn't it?
Oh, for sure. Especially because we had to call all staff members and all interns Miss. So going from someone I was friends with to having to call her Miss whatever to just her staff was strange.
That is strange. It's strange just to have it's strange to have an adult watch you use the toilet, but it's strange to have them sleeping in the same dorm as you as well.
Yeah.
So Teen Challenge, is it only aimed at females, or is there like a whole separate program for boys that and it's just they just don't integrate?
Yeah, so there are adolescent male and adult male programs, as well as there's adolescent female and adult female programs. We don't really interact with the other programs. So there is a Teen Challenge conference every year where several different centers within the Southeast U.S. will congregate. But, none of us could talk to the males at all. Like, we couldn't make eye contact with them. We couldn't gesture them, nothing. Like, they would sit the male programs on the separate side of the sanctuary where we had, like, because we'd have, like, sermons and things every day. So the males would be sat on the other side of the sanctuary than the females.
Right. That is, very, very strange. So I was going to say, is it that there's, like, one peer group, so your peer group, for example, are enrolled in 2013 and then you're the only residents there until you graduate in 2015, but that can't be right if people are forced to restart the program. So do you have people underneath you and above you in terms of progress through the program?
Yeah, so there's no like There's not like, okay, this week of or this day in October we'll have like 10 people doing an intake. It's just random. Like
All
people just
right.
come in randomly.
And
So
how many people were in your peer group? Do you remember?
like as far as the group that I graduated with, there was, I want to say there were five of us, but I also had 5 months added to my time, and several other people had time added to their time to the program. So it wasn't really accurate. It was just the people that I happened to graduate with.
Right. What did you have the time added for?
So 2 months was for not completing the PSNCs, because I just also ADHD and everything. I would just sit and I would stare at a wall for an hour and just wouldn't do any of the work. That I had a month added because I was, so you have to have 3 home visits to graduate. Before I was getting ready to go on my first one, my brother was moving his stuff about 2 hours away to go to college, got into a car accident. So my parents were gonna have to help him move up, like take his stuff back and forth to help him move in. And I wouldn't have been able to go with, and I wasn't allowed to stay home by myself, so I couldn't go home. So I added a month for that.
How is that? That is not
I know, not
even
my fault.
that's completely out of your control.
Exactly. Which that was insane to me. About 3 weeks before I was supposed to graduate, my counselor called me in and said they decided to add 2 months onto my program because they felt I wasn't ready to go home and that I needed to heal things with my family more.
Just do you. Is this paid for on a monthly basis? Because what would be the incentive for them to keep you there?
So it's not paid for on a monthly basis, but they would have to pay more for that time added.
Right, okay. So I'm seeing sort of an agenda here.
Yeah.
And in the rule book, it mentioned that you needed to have all of your medical and dental care taken care of before you enroll into the program. So were you sent to Teen Challenge with medication for your ADHD?
So my parents had taken me off of it beforehand because they said they didn't like the food it put me in. So they just were like, "You're not taking this anymore." About probably 7 months before going into the program.
Okay, so you're enrolled in the program with a non-medicated diagnosis of ADHD.
Yes,
Are
not.
you supported throughout the program because of this or not?
No. They don't let anybody take any psychiatric medication for
Right,
any
okay.
reason.
So even if you were diagnosed with severe schizophrenia, you would not be able to have any medication.
Nope.
Right. And at what point? At what point do they make exceptions when you're at risk of harming yourself and others because you're not medicated for a condition that should absolutely be medicated?
I mean, they don't do anything about the medication side of it. It's just like, oh, pray, like God will help you with your mental illness.
Right,
There was one
okay.
girl who I personally didn't know, but she had told me about this. She was having, I want to say it was some kind of manic episode or something, and they thought she was possessed, so they tried to cast a demon out of her.
Right, okay. Did it help?
No. I mean, it helps until she got like calmed down, but it, obviously there's no demon there, so there's no real help that happened.
And with food, clothing, and sleep, and any of those things, were they restricted in any way?
Clothing, they were very strict on what we could and couldn't wear. One of the first things in your intake was they would have you try on all of your clothes that you came with to make sure they're within guidelines. If you got any new clothes on a family visit, you'd have to try on everything to make sure it's within guidelines.
And what is guidelines like super modest?
Yeah, so you couldn't have any, no graphic tees, no anything with just a big picture. It had to be patterned. It couldn't be more than finger lengths below your collarbone. No hoodies, nothing with a hood on it. No tight jeans. Jeans had to be like less than 5% spandex. Closed toe shoes. Shoes had to have an arch in them. Stuff like that.
And you identify as a transgender man, so
Yes.
what was it like having to live in the narrative of Christian heteronormative and be surrounded by other women and be addressed as a woman and a girl, and girls should be like this and girls should be proper in this way and that way.
So I had not come to the realization I was trans yet upon going in.
Okay.
I had started to realize maybe I was bisexual, but that was probably squashed. My first exposure to what transgender people really were in Teen Challenge. We had a purity conference, and one of the parts of the purity conference was watching these videos about what was a person who said they used to be trans, but was like, oh, but, you know, God redeemed me. Like, I'm not actually trans. You're not actually trans. It's whatever from the devil, like deception. And then from a few gay people saying, oh, God saved me from being gay because the Bible says this and there's no, people aren't actually gay, like things like that. So it was okay. Very damaging for a very long time. It took me a lot, like years to, you know, come to terms with my sexuality and my gender identity because that was so ingrained into me.
So you're at this, you're 13 years old, which obviously is a pinnacle stage in terms of hormonal development.
Yes.
And your body is changing physically. So you're going through these difficult and complicated changes anyway. Then you're exposed to new things that you had no idea of before going to Teen Challenge, things like substance abuse and then sexuality, gender, things that, you know, you weren't thinking about beforehand. So all of this gets muddled in your journey to realizing, you know, how you identify, and you yeah. then have this difficulty of trying to detangle everything from the religion, Teen Challenge, the way others talked and felt about their sexuality in Teen Challenge, and then accepting yourself as you are without any guilt or doubt or second guessing.
Yeah, that, I mean, it's a long process. I mean, it was, in general, to anyone who's not having gone through that, I mean, it's a process anyways, but it just prolonged it. It made it more difficult. There was a lot of feelings of guilt, a lot of shame, a lot of, this isn't right, like, I'm just making this up. And I mean, even being in the program as, after realizing I was trans, like, looking back to my life, I'm like, oh, that makes more sense now.
Right.
But I mean, it was always just so much discomfort with being around so many females all the time, with having, you know, the dress requirements sometimes. It just was, there was never a real comfort in it.
Okay. And do you think there's the potential for others who are identify as you do, who are going to be enrolled into Teen Challenge and have to go through that situation and not identify the way that they are being spoken to?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there are people like that. I mean, there are people who are sent there for being queer.
Right.
So I can't imagine, like, people who have already realized they were trans going in and how harmful that would be to them, you know, and being constantly told, well, you're a girl, like, God made you this way, this, you have a girl's purpose and all of that.
And where are you now on your journey? Are you at a place where you're comfortable with yourself and you know, you can approach society and let them know how, you know, who you are?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm so comfortable with myself. I've started the medical transition part of it. I mean, it's really just helped having a good support system of friends and my partner who are just so supportive, and just allow me to be unapologetically who I am.
Amazing.
Which has just given me more confidence, you know, presenting myself to the world as well.
That's amazing. Good for you. And thank you to those people that have been that network of support for you, because not everybody has the basic support that they should have. So it's a big round of applause to those people helping you. Amazing.
Oh, absolutely.
And what about the people in your peer group that you graduated with, or anybody you met at Teen Challenge? Are you still in contact with anybody?
Yeah, so I'm still in contact with quite a few of them. We have a few Facebook groups. There's one for specifically the years that I attended, like 2012, like, you know, adding like 2012 to 2016. So I'm still in contact with a lot of them. Yeah. And I'll, you know, some of them did fall off for a while there, was having some issues. Quite a few of them are really getting their life on track now, though. It just took a while.
Right. Okay. And just going back to the cost of the program, do you have any idea how much your parents paid?
It was $30,000 to $50,000.
Say that again.
$30,000 to $50,000.
For a 20-month program.
So it's 15 months is the normal program length.
Right.
I don't know exactly what my parents paid. I just know it's within that range.
That is extortionate, considering most people are going to have to come out of that and then re-enroll for formal education. And what was the biggest takeaway for $50,000 worth of money for you when you left Teen Challenge?
Trauma. I mean, there was no real takeaway there. It was just.
That is crazy. Did you sit down and speak with your parents about all of this afterwards?
I've never talked to them about it. I've never actually sat down. Because initially getting out of the program, you know, there was still that brainwashing state of this was a good thing, like this was a God thing. You know, it was a good place to be, like God's helped me, but in reality, it was just the behavior adjustment and no real change into how I was feeling,
That
how I
is,
acted.
that's so sad, isn't it? Especially if that's the same experience for the majority of people that attended.
Yeah.
That's
I
so
mean,
much
I'm.
money.
It is. And the thing that really kind of pisses me off is the money used to pay for it was a part of my inheritance when my parents would pass away.
No, don't say that. That's not right. That's not, oh my goodness, Tyler, that's infuriating.
Yeah. I kind of like got like kind of turned like I'm less angry about it, but also like, damn it. Like, I can't believe that, but
It's
it
part of
kind of
your
been.
inheritance is being used for you to have a traumatic experience. That is,
Yeah.
oh my goodness, you must have been furious.
I wasn't mad at the time, so I was like, oh, okay, like that's fine. Like it's something for me specifically. But like as I got older, I was like, hold on a second, that's kind of messed up there.
Yeah. And what, I mean, do you think you would show this podcast episode to your parents?
No. I mean, we
No.
haven't spoken in over a year and a half, so.
Okay. So you're estranged from them now.
Essentially, yeah.
Okay. And I know this, a former CDU resident that I interviewed a few weeks back, she mentioned that she never wanted to speak explicitly about her trauma and her abuse during her time at CDU because she didn't want her parents to feel like they wasted their money. And she didn't want to sound like she'd failed the program by not finishing it with the intended effect of the emotional growth curriculum that they provided.
Right.
So I suppose people that have these experiences, because not every single person that goes through Teen Challenge is going to come out of Teen Challenge saying that they have experienced something that is going to affect them negatively later in life or straight away. Some people are going to say Teen Challenge really helped my life. I'm not saying that it's unanimously damaging to every single person that attended because a former Rocky Mountain Academy resident got in touch with me the other day to say that I was wrong to call people survivors of the troubled teen industry because not every person experienced trauma or abuse whilst they were there. However, I would argue the fact that people that did experience abuse and trauma aren't making it up and therefore have a right to express those things that happen to them. And I'm not going to take away from either narrative. So I just wanted to put that out
Absolutely.
there for anybody that wanted to get in touch and argue their point on that. But people that don't speak to their parents might decide not to because of the same reasons of not wanting to let them know that they'd spent so much money on a program that basically just gave that person PTSD and anxiety and problems later on in life. So who knows? But just going back to something else that you mentioned in our earlier email thread about the restriction of sharing information with the residents whilst you were living there. So there was a significant piece of information that was kept from you during your time in Teen Challenge. Would you just like to let the listeners know about that?
Oh yeah. So if y'all remember the Ebola scare, what was it, 2015? We were not told about that. We only found out because the pastor at our church mentioned it. And so obviously we're all like, hey, what is that? So they had to tell us at that point because too many people were asking questions and it was kind of hard to hide it at that point. But yeah, I mean, they kept that from us.
And it was quite a big legitimate scare in America as well.
Yeah. Yeah. From my understanding, I think there were a few people that had it. Again, I'm still not entirely sure. I'll be honest, I have no idea what happened in the year 2014 in the world. Still not a clue.
That's interesting, isn't it? It's like you're asleep and then you wake up and it's 2016. So what has life been like since Teen Challenge? What have you managed to have you taken any steps in terms of healing? How have you adapted to life since Teen Challenge?
So initially getting out of the program, it was really difficult because my parents still isolated me heavily and I was doing the same online school we did in Teen Challenge. I just ended up continuing it once I got home. And things were really hard to adjust. It was hard to adjust to not being monitored constantly, to not, you know, being able to speak more freely. Because even while coming home was not the best, it was just hard to adjust. I mean, another thing was we weren't allowed to touch each other in the program, like no high fives, no hugs, no nothing. So like my mom is a very touchy person. She likes to hug. She's, you know, put your hand on her shoulder, that kind of thing. And it was off-putting for a while just because I was trying to adjust back to it. That was difficult. But I think I did attend college briefly because I ended up graduating high school at 16 rather than 18, which is the normal in the U.S. So I ended up starting to work when I was 16. And I started college when I was 16. That really did help me adjust because it was basically being thrown out to the real world among non-Teen Challenge people. So it kind of forced my hand there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Finding like-minded people as well that enjoy the same things that you do. And it's not just religion that you have in common and nothing else.
Exactly. So that really helped as well. I mean, it's been a difficult process because I moved from Florida to Colorado. I'm originally from Florida. So it really does affect my life so regularly now having been there. Big changes are really difficult for me to deal with. Being that big change from going to Teen Challenge to being back, they would move us like dorm to dorm, like with, you know, no notice. Be like, okay, well, you're moving to this other dorm today. So big changes are hard to deal with. There are certain foods I can't eat now. There are certain things, like random things that are triggers for me. But I think overall, like, I feel like I've come out pretty well from everything. I'm generally pretty happy in my life. I mean, I've been in therapy for about 6-7 months now, which has been just a huge help, which is a big part of why I am now so outspoken and I talk about the troubled teen industry so much. Because it's like now I'm able to really talk about it. It's not as painful.
So you've obviously made some positive steps towards, improving your own mental health and kind of taking ownership of the experience you had and not allowing it to stop you
from growing as a human being and having positive experiences. You've spoken about your friends and your partner who have helped you on that journey as well. Were these people that you met, you know, once you were thrown into that world of college and whatnot?
Yes. So one of my friends I met when I worked in fast food for a while when I was 16. So I met mm-hmm. him there. My partner, my other friend, they were actually friends in high school. They ended up both going to the same college that I went to. So that's how I met the two of them.
Awesome.
But then the other really close friend that I have is the partner of my friend I met while working.
And I mean, the steps you've taken to you know, find some positivity and change your own narrative, is this the advice you would give to others, or is there anything you think you would mention to other survivors of the troubled teen industry that could help them on their journey to get into the same sort of place that you are at now?
Therapy. I recommend therapy to everyone, basically. But I mean, getting a good therapist, someone who's really good with working with trauma specifically, you know, trying to find friends, yes, that have gone through the same thing, but also people who haven't gone through that, because then you get that sense of normalcy, you know, where all your friends aren't just people who have gone through the same experience. I'd stay away from any kind of substance. I was personally teetering on alcoholism for a little while when I was 18, partially trying to cope with everything. You know, just stay away from it, I really think, because it's easy just to use it to numb anything.
Right. Okay. And in terms of alcohol and things like that, are you in a better place with those things as well?
Oh, 100%.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. Well done. I mean, I know those things are so difficult to work through, so congratulations on getting yourself to a place of sobriety as well. Your story is really inspiring. You've come so far and done so many things personally to stop this experience from having any more negative impact on you, which I think is really inspiring.
Thank you.
So congratulations on that. Hopefully that can inspire any of the other listeners that could be tuning in. So one last thing before I offer it over to you, in case you think we've missed anything, is the Teen Challenge blog post that you mentioned. I didn't know if you just wanted to talk through that for the listeners, for anybody who may have been a resident at Teen Challenge and doesn't know about this blog post.
Yeah, so it's actually a website that I stumbled across a few years back while looking just for any other information. So it is a blog website, essentially, of people trying to expose and talk about their experiences within the program. I am actually looking this up right now. Here it is. So it's called Investigating Teen Challenge, for anyone who's interested. It's from late 2000s, so 2007 to 2009. So it's really just people talking about their stories within different locations. Really, if you search around on, TikTok, Tumblr, Facebook, like, you'll find people talking about their experiences. If you go to the Google reviews of different programs, like, you'll find the negative experiences. Like, it's not too hard to find. It's just because it's such a powerful corporation, essentially, they're really good at convincing people otherwise.
I went on the blog myself and read some of the reviews that were left that people had screenshotted and shared on the Teen Challenge blog post, and it was very insightful to read some of the harsh reviews, or truthful reviews that people had left. So that was my first, apart from our emails backwards and forwards, that was my first real insight into the types of experiences that people had had. So even if people are just interested in learning a bit more about Teen Challenge from a resident and or ex attendees perspective, then definitely go and check out that blog post. But I'm going to hand it over to you, Tyler, in case you think there's anything we've missed off.
Okay. So one thing I did want to mention that I thought was really interesting that I found probably about 2 months ago, so fairly recently, the Better Business Bureau has a nonprofit section of it where they, you know, saying what's approved by them and what's all good to go. So I found Teen Challenge on there. One thing I found very interesting besides, despite being a rehabilitation program, I believe it's within the last 5 or 10 years, I think 10 years or more, they have not completed an effectiveness assessment.
Right. Okay. So what does that?
So there's been no formal assessment, nothing sent to Better Business Bureau, nonprofit department, whether how effective the program is.
So there's nobody policing the program itself then. It sounds like it's just kind of being left to its own.
Essentially.
Right. Okay.
So I just thought that was something that was very interesting that I found. It's...
Why do you think that is? Do you think it's just because local authorities don't have the time or information to want to get involved? Or is it because there's, as you mentioned, it's a section of it's a nonprofit section of a bigger, probably multi-million pound company. So is it because it's affiliated with influential, rich, higher up people? Why do you think it's just kind of being left with no official?
I really think that's a big part of it. I know the Bush family, I don't know if you're familiar with them. It was one of, or two of our presidents, actually. They're very heavily involved in Teen Challenge, as well as the Clinton family, less so, but they are involved. So, I mean, having such large influential political figures is a big part of it. The sheer size of the organization, the money that they bring in over $2 million a year. Where that goes, I don't know. Well, pockets is where it goes, you know. but yeah, I think that plays a huge part of it, having so many influential people involved.
And it's interesting you mentioned that President Bush is an ally or advocate for this program, because I interviewed somebody recently who attended a program called Straightway, which is based on Teen Challenge, but the families are encouraged to move to the compound and live there. So the therapy and the program is based on Teen Challenge, but it's like rehabilitation, drug, alcohol rehabilitation therapy for adults, where they are encouraged to live on site and have as little access with the outside world as possible. So it's just another offshoot of Synanon that comes back to, you know, all these things being linked. And President Bush was also a huge advocate for that program, and would talk about the efficacy of Straightway, or Restoration City as it's called now, and has gone by many different names. So it's interesting how all these things seem to just come back on themselves.
Yeah, that very is strange. Interesting.
But anyway, I've gone through all of my points, Tyler. So I just wanted to say a massive thank you for giving me your time, for allowing me to be trusted with your story, for being able to hear how you've gone through turbulence and upheaval and self-harm and drinking, and here you are now, upbeat, you've got your own life, friends, your own partner, you're moving, you're living the dream, and it's just absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much for sitting down and speaking with me about it today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely, thanks for having me. I'm really glad I could talk about my experiences with you.
It's been my privilege, Tyler. I really hope you enjoy the rest of your day and that your allergies ease up for you as well.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Okay, bye, Tyler. Take care.
Bye, you too.
That is the end of this week's episode. Please follow the Breaking Code Silence movement across social media. And remember to like, share, subscribe to the podcast. Leaving a review really helps. If you wish, find me on patreon.com/thecultvault, at cultvaultpodcast@gmail.com, or Twitter and Instagram at cultvaultpod. I'm your speaker, Casey, and this has been The Cult Vault.